Good morning and welcome. This is Seek Sustainable Japan. I'm JJ Walsh in Hiroshima, Japan, and I'm joined by...
Hi, I'm Tova Kinooka in Yokohama.
And this is our kind of, we're changing from a monthly into a seasonal this time. So we have 2 months of content. We're talking about sustainability in Japan and projects that we've been involved with. Both of us are very sustainability focused in a positive way, trying to make a good change. And Toga, you just came back from Belfast.
Yes, so we, for about 5 years now, I've been working with an organization called One Young World, which is a UK-based NPO that brings a big summit together every year in a different city each time, and brings together about 2,000 young leaders aged between 18 and 30 from around the world. And the focus is all on sustainability, social and environmental issues. This year it was in Belfast. Some incredible speakers there. You can see from, you know, young influencers through to, you know, royals who are activists as well, politicians, some really, really impressive people. But actually some of the most impressive were some of the young leaders themselves who were talking about the projects they're doing in whatever country they come from. So I met this wonderful young man from Afghanistan, for example, who left the country about 4 or 5 years ago, and decided that he would dedicate his life to promoting peace. And so now he has developed workshops and has set up an NPO, and he goes around to places where there's conflict or sort of history of conflict, and is working with children in schools to try and sort of break the cycle of hate and promote sort of better understanding between sort of fractured communities. And there was a lovely moment when I was able to connect him with somebody I'd been connected to who's in Belfast doing similar work with a boys' school there. Because although part of the reason we were in Belfast is that it's 25 years this year, the anniversary of the peace agreement there, the Good Friday Agreement. But there are still, you know, we were hearing from a lot of the locals under the surface, you know, things are not always easy still. And so this guy's working with kids in schools to look at, you know, how can we understand and respect each other better and promote peace from that young age before the kind of the mindset gets too hard. So we connected those guys and they're now going to work together.
Oh, that's fantastic. So,
yeah, it was really very, very inspiring.
You have this one slide. Is this your group that you went over with?
Yes. Yeah. So that's this year's delegates from PwC Japan. And PwC was there sort of in force this year. We had quite a lot of delegates from other territories as well. But we're working with this group of 13 of them, brilliant young people from different parts of the organization who are all very passionate about change, whether that's environment or mental health or education, whatever it is. And so the summit is part of a 9-month journey for them on sustainability entrepreneurship. So now we get down to the serious work. So having sort of been inspired and spoken to different people, got to understand issues in more depth at the summit, now we come back and we're looking at, okay, so what projects can we set up and get moving within the company that will have a positive impact both within the organization but also on sort of people and planet outside. So that's the next phase.
Nice. This other photo talking about IKEA, is yep. That like a student project that they're trying to launch a new like incentive inside the company?
The IKEA one was that was a stage sponsored by IKEA that had different discussions going on throughout the summit. So the discussion there was really incredible. That was on inclusion. And the leader you can see sat on the blue sofa there. I'm very embarrassed. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. She's very young, but she's a politician in Kenya and she's blind. She's fully blind. And people told her, well, you can't do this. It's impossible. And she thankfully wouldn't listen to any of that and has sort of broken through barriers at so many different levels and was talking about sort of disability in leadership and how we can be more inclusive, how we need to understand different needs better. And as leaders also have visible role models there. So she was a really, really inspiring speaker.
That's fantastic. And that connects to the conference I went to, run by Fabric, and it's a shame you
Yes.
couldn't go. It was in Tokyo.
I'm so sad I missed that.
But Jin Song Montesano was also talking about inclusion and her work at Lyxil, working for HR, and how the first step to more diversity is just teaching strategies in inclusion. And I
Yes.
found that talk really amazing, to listen to her ideas about, just even if your group is mostly men in the group, getting them to accept other points of view is like the first step in the right direction. So that was great. This is a picture from the event at Fabric. So
It looks like
Jane's
a lot
there.
of
That was
fun.
great to see.
Brilliant.
Now you had this other screenshot here from one of the talks.
Yeah, this was one that it really stuck with me. This is from Deutsche Bahn, who massive company based in Germany but operating all over the world. And I really like their talk because the head of sustainability was talking, and she was talking very much about the mindset, which, as you know, is something that I'm always bashing on about. And so much focus goes on the processes and the strategies, which of course are extremely important. But she was talking about how important the mindset is and how companies need to be working with their HR, with their talent acquisition teams, to make sure they're hiring for the right kind of mindset, make sure they're developing and supporting people to develop that, so that sustainability is integrated into every role, every function, at every level of the company. And I was just so happy to hear somebody else saying that. We've been talking about this for years, and a lot of people would sort of go, "Oh, yes, that sounds interesting." And then when you actually try to say, "Okay, so let's try and get this moving in your organization," sort of think, "Oh, well, it's all the soft, fuzzy stuff, and maybe it's not so important." But she was really sort of talking about how every person being hired into Deutsche Bahn goes through their sustainability training to understand what is sustainability, why is it important for our company, what does this mean for you in whatever role you're going to be doing. So I was very, very encouraged to hear a company talking like that.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. There was another speaker at, because the event Sustainability in Japan, it was mostly about their third year of data that they've just done at Fabric, which has amazing insights, and it's all completely bilingual and available online for anyone who wants to look. But there's so much about how people have awareness about brands in Japan's market, and how those that data has changed over the last 3 years that they've been doing the survey. And so there were some really interesting takeaways there. For example, 22.1% of people said they'd like to move to a more sustainable home. 27.4% said they would like to support gender equality. 31.2% said they'd like to switch to an electric vehicle. These are just a few of the takeaways from the data that we talked about at the event as well. And 33.7% would like to switch to renewable energy. So I'm not sure, I haven't seen much data or this kind of survey abroad so much, so it's hard to compare. But it does seem like Japan's market consumer awareness is a little bit less aware of the need for sustainable brands and sustainability, but this research that Fabric is doing is really insightful and
It
for a
is.
variety of industries, I think.
It is. It's really, really insightful. And I think also it's very exciting because brands have such power, particularly here, where, people do tend to trust and choose brands that they know and recognize and like. So that puts a huge responsibility, but also a huge opportunity onto the brands to say, look, you can do something about this. You can drive change, and, change the way you're making your products or what you're using in your products and really make an impact here. So I find that really very encouraging.
Yeah. And it was exciting for me coming from Hiroshima to Tokyo that one of the main speakers was Yuta Oka, and he is doing a really exciting project they have been working on for the past 10 years in the Sitoda area, not far from Onomichi. It's along the Shimanami Kaido. And his whole idea that he was talking about is about regenerating community and neighborhoods, not just about sustainable business in isolation, but you are part of reviving rural communities. And that those kinds of examples we can apply to so many areas
Very
around
much.
Japan. So that was wonderful to hear. Now, when you were in London, you stayed at a really exciting B Corp hotel, right?
So when I was looking for accommodation, I came across this one called Inhabit. They've got several hotels around the UK, not just London, I think. And I was absolutely stunned to find that it's a B Corp. It's, registered B Corp. I don't think I've ever come across a hotel before that is. And you can just see it and feel it from the moment you walk in the door. There's no plastic in sight anywhere, either sort of throughout the shared areas of the hotel. It's the sort of library area where I did some work there. There's free filtered water on hand. There's free sort of coffee and stuff available, but it's all ethically sourced and made sure that that there's no sort of single use packaging anywhere in the rooms. Again, sort of there's no bottled water or plastic or anything like that. It's just sort of fresh filtered water in a jug is put there each day. And so I was really, really impressed with their just really holistic take on this. And they've got a restaurant attached to the hotel as well, which most of it's sort of vegan or vegetarian options there in the food, locally sourced, ethically sourced. So I mean, obviously to get the B Corp certification, they've had to really go through every thing that they do and every aspect of that. And it was really very impressive to see, and I think a real benchmark for what hotels can do. So I would love to see more of those in
Yeah.
Japan and elsewhere.
Amazing. And I love that simplicity. I was looking on their website here for their Green Key, which is more sustainable hospitality. What are they actually doing? And I love that simplified, just very simply saying we have excellent tap water. You know, like when I went to the Saijo Sake Matsuri recently, and all of the sake breweries, they are so proud of the local water that they use to make sake. And so they have all these refill stations in front of their brewery where you can refill with water. And all of them, yes, all of them were listed on my menu. So I was so happy to see that. And seeing everybody at the festival, not only enjoying sake, but also really enjoying water, not from a single-use bottle, just
Brilliant.
refilling their own bottles. You know, I mean, we just need more of that, those simple solutions, right?
And it was just sort of, it's a real mindset shift, right? I know this is something I've again bash on about a lot, but sort of going to into the hotel lobby, and there's a large jug of water available, and some glasses there, or you can just refill your own bottle. And I thought the number of meetings I go to where, everybody there's a plastic bottle of water put out for everyone. And yet these are still companies or places that are talking about, sustainability and how important it is to them. And you're like, that's really not a hard change to make. And we're very fortunate that we live in a country, both here and in the UK, where the tap water is drinkable. It's absolutely fine. So, why are we still using bottled water? There is really no excuse for that. So I would love to see more sort of just take the simple steps like that. Because then again, it starts people talking, starts people thinking, well, okay, what else could we do? What's next? But it's really not a hard shift to make.
Yeah. Absolutely. One other bit of data from that hotel and the B Corp certification was really gender forward. They are promoting and really showing how gender equality, in fact, more women are represented in their hotel. 75% female. I still teach young women in Japan, and they are very frustrated, as are many young people in general in Japan, for the situations they're going into for work and feeling there is a big gap between how they're treated and how their male counterparts doing the same work are. And this is a big problem for Japan because we need as many young people working here and paying tax as possible, right? To regenerate our economy. It's a big deal.
Very much so, very much so.
So when I went to the Sake Matsuri as well in Saijo, one of Hiroshima's most famous events, it was great to see so much inclusion of the international community there. There's Hiroshima University there. So when I saw this omikoshi crew carrying the portable shrine, it was filled with international students. And then later in the day, there was another one with women and children. And again, very international. So even in small pockets around Japan, we're starting to see, especially where they have a university and more international students, we're starting to see a greater mix of, right? Like international people who are invested in living in Japan. So it's interesting to see that change even at festivals, right?
No, that's brilliant. I think, the more people can get involved in local communities and festivals and things like that, it helps break down barriers, right? When you're doing something fun together, it's not the Japanese and the foreigners. If you can all work together and enjoy that, I think it helps build much better mutual understanding, mutual respect. Hopefully that's going to then help accelerate things moving forward as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a little product shout out. I'm sure this is happening all over Japan, but I am a big fan of the soap that sake breweries are making from the byproduct of making sake. And I've seen, this is one example, I've seen lots of examples at different breweries of beautiful, really high quality beauty soap. So if you're visiting any sake brewery around Japan, ask if they have some soap because I've been using it and I'm so impressed by how good it is. So definitely worth checking out. And
Yeah,
if
well,
you're
listen to that.
reusing waste, it's a win-win, right?
Ah, brilliant, brilliant. Yes, yeah. Well, I'm very much looking forward. Next month, I'll be heading to Kamikatsu, which I'm sure most people have heard of. It's the zero waste town in Japan, in Shikoku. So, really looking forward to seeing how they're reusing waste in lots of different ways as well. So, some great
Yeah,
examples out there, aren't
absolutely. Yeah,
there?
I can't wait to hear your impressions from Kamikatsu. Now, one thing, since you mentioned Kamikatsu, I have been loving all of the blooms recently. Now, some of my guests from America said these are called sweet olive in America, but in is it kinmokusei in Japanese? So like a golden tree blossom, I guess. And the beautiful momiji, the maple leaves are all changing color.
Just starting, yeah.
But Kamikatsu, one thing to point out, which is so unusual, and they started many years ago, is they have a leaf selling industry where
Yeah,
they collect beautiful leaves from their trees and send them to restaurants and hotels around Japan. I
I
just think that's the most brilliant idea.
It's wonderful, but I think it was you who told me also the people who collect the leaves are sort of often the elderly who maybe this gives them a reason to get up, get out, go and do something, and to interact with others, whereas otherwise they might be sitting at home lonely and not getting any exercise. So I think it's got a wonderful social impact element as well as the business side as
Yeah,
well.
absolutely. Make sure you go with the hotel staff of the main onsen hotel, and they'll give you a little tour of their leaf garden at the back, and they'll show you which ones they can sell for how much and what the appeal is. I think the persimmon, the multicolored persimmon leaf, was the highest value one, but it's just incredible to be able to make money from something as simple as leaves and include people in your community who are maybe less included in the economy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Now, you had a great example from Okinawa as well.
Yeah, so I was listening to a podcast from OIST, so Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology, and I think I mentioned last time we did this live stream about sort of visiting there. But I stumbled across this live stream yesterday from the Bioconvergence Center of Innovation, as you can see there, which was absolutely fascinating. So they're talking about the sort of intersection of sort of neuroscience, psychology, anthropology, social sciences, and environmental science as well. So sort of understanding the links and connections and exploring the links and connections between physical environment, the sort of internal biology of the brain, and how we interact with others and with our environment. And for a biology nerd like me, it was just really, really interesting. But I think also it made me think about sort of how we often get very fixated on a particular subject or a particular area and don't think about the broader connections and sort of the context that that sits in. And in the work we do a lot of sort of spend a lot of time talking about ecosystem thinking, and you know, with the One Young World team that we're working with from PwC, we're sort of working a lot on that, sort of getting them to think more holistically and see the connections and interdependencies between different things and how those interact and influence each other. And when they were the podcaster and his guest were talking about this, they were describing how the different sort of areas of science come together, and they have to learn to be able to talk each other's language. So, you know, a neuroscientist needs to be able to talk to a philosopher, for example, or somebody who's studying well-being, and say, okay, well, here's, you know, what I see happening, and how does that connect to what you're doing? And then how do we create this sort of understanding of where we are more broadly? And it really made me think about the sort of parallels that we see in trying to embed sustainability mindsets into organizations, where very often it's seen as just the sustainability team has the responsibility, the rest of the organization doesn't really need to think too much about it. So what we're trying to do is bring together the different functions and say, okay, well, if you're in finance or procurement or marketing or HR, whatever it is, what's your connection here? What's your role? And how do all of these different functions and pieces work together to actually drive the organization forward in this? So it was very interesting to hear that. And I'm sort of excited to listen to more of those podcasts, I think, and see what other ideas come up from that.
That sounds great. I'll have to find that. But that seems very similar to, I just had a chance to go and talk to a group of students from America. I gave them a tour of our Hiroshima incinerator, which is $400 million project. Beautiful. Wow. It doesn't make sound. It doesn't make any noise. It doesn't have any smell. So talking about waste management there. Mm. And then going out to the beautiful island that they're studying on in Hiroshima, Osaki Kamijima, and hearing about their studies there. And the reason I was connected to this was because I reached out to a woman named Abby Burrows, who is one of the most amazing microplastic researchers around the world. And she has started an oyster farm in Maine, where the students is their main point of study, completely plastic free, and trying to go overcome the hurdles that she's been studying for, and herself show how it is possible. So it was great to connect to her. And then I said, you know, would you like to be on my show? And she said, I'm actually going to be in Hiroshima. And so I had a chance to go and meet her and her students. And her students are studying human ecology. Ooh. So I think in that way, very similar to what you're talking about there.
Yeah.
And the needs of people and planet, and how do they intersect with business? So again, people, planet, profit, and balance. Yeah. So it was really fascinating. And they're on this small island. in Hiroshima, you can only access by ferry. And I was thinking you have to go off and do lots of field work off. But they had found through this global Setochi Global Academy, all local contacts. So they're working with local citrus farmers, local oyster farmers. They're testing river water, ocean water, tap water for microplastics. They're doing all the aims of their course on this small island. Brilliant. And that was just so wonderful to see the possibilities of that as well in my own backyard. I didn't even know about it. So sometimes you really have to reach outside of your circle. And then sometimes just by chance, it comes back to where you are. Isn't that amazing?
Yes. No, it's wonderful how these things just happen. Serendipity. And maybe that sort of connects to, I was interested what you were saying there about the sort of showing them the waste management sort of plant in here and the incinerator there. I just saw a post on LinkedIn earlier this morning from my friend Paul Beddy, who's a big sustainability champion, part of the sustainability mafia, as we joke about here in Tokyo. And he works for Capgemini, and he said at lunchtime yesterday, him and his team all went down to the sort of basement part of the building where they're in, and were looking at where does their waste go and how much waste do they produce. And actually the building is keeping track of all of this, what comes from what company. And so he said it was really sort of eye-opening to look at sort of how many kilograms of waste they produce each sort of week or month or whatever, as a company, from just being in the office. Then they can set targets around that. Once they actually know, they can say, okay, well, how could we reduce this? What could we use differently to reduce our waste impact? So I thought that was really great, and it would be wonderful to see other companies doing the same. So good job, Paul, and hopefully that'll influence others as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's all about seeing what your waste is, trying to try out strategies that are going to assess that, and then reassessing and seeing if it's working and what you need to tweak, right? That's all the strategy that we always talk about. One of my students, international students, she's from South Korea, and she was talking about South Korea's tackling of food waste. And how they started having these machines to collect food waste on the street, and you have your residence card and you have to pay for all your food waste.
Oh, wow.
And that really seriously reduced all their food waste. Yes. But also they have a way to separate food waste from recyclables, compostables, right? And really reuse it because it's collected in one area. So they're using it as animal feed. They're using it in farming. They're using it as biofuel.
Brilliant.
So it's 95% of their food waste is now accounted for and able to reuse. And I just thought, what a great model that we could apply around the world. Japan, definitely. Really other countries as well.
Yeah.
But having that idea that it's part of our responsibility if we have food waste in our family or company to take it as a machine and be transparent and accountable about it. And it only costs them about $6 a month. So it's not like it's a huge cost increase either, right?
No. I mean, that's a brilliant example. And that's so important. Like the key factors there, I think, A, seeing it, visualizing how much waste am I producing, but then also being responsible for it, actually having to pay something for it, that hits you where it hurts. And I think people will start to pay attention and change behaviors then. So that's a wonderful example to hear.
Yeah. And as a university student, she was saying for her as a young person, it really changed how much food she was ordering when she got takeout.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like before she was just like, I'll get loads. It doesn't cost much. And then wasted a lot of it.
Yeah.
And then it changed her thinking and she became more aware of her food waste and would order less. Mm-hmm. And then she said, it also made me healthier. Because I was choosing better, you know?
Yeah, no, that's brilliant.
So we have just another minute, Tova. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about? Any books you're reading?
Gosh, I'm reading something completely unrelated to sustainability at the moment. The autobiography of Miriam Margoyles, sort of an actress that some people might be familiar with from the Harry Potter or sort of British comedy like Blackadder and things like that. But just again, I mean, as a gay woman, Jewish background, sort of perhaps not your typical sort of tall, slim model actress sort of type, it's been really interesting sort of hearing the story of her life and how she struggled with inclusion and being accepted and things. So it's unrelated to sustainability sort of directly, but actually it's really opening my eyes a lot about inclusion and the challenges that different sort of people face in different situations. So yeah, good fun.
Wow. I think sometimes we have to read outside our field, and then sometimes it sparks new ideas.
Exactly.
That's a brilliant example. And that sounds very connected to social equity, which is part of sustainability, right?
Very much so. Very much so.
Well, thank you, Soba. Thanks, everyone, for joining, and have a great day. Hopefully we'll catch up beginning of winter, maybe, is our next one, right?
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.